We are in a weekly discussion today, being a Tuesday, in English medium. We have already assigned topic for the day, but before going into that traditional one, assigned one, I would like to invite, if anyone is having circumstantial issues or interview reports or any kind of suggestions or criticism, we'll give a chance first. Before starting the formal discussion.
Avasarai Swaminathan, I'm Kumara here.
Yes, I can hear, please.
Yeah. Swaminathan, there are two reports from one person. One is for the sitting, the other one is walking. May I present it?
Yes, please.
Lisaki Hettiarachige, 7 years old. When I was meditating, I heard loud noises and I was feeling relaxed. I was concentrating on the breath in and out. I was meditating on the bench and my leg was hurting. I could concentrate on the breath in and out. I could feel cold air coming in my nose and warm air coming out. When I had to open my eyelids felt dry because my carpet soft, so my feet was soft too. When I was walking, my ankle was hurting a tiny bit. I also heard noises like birds chirping. Thoughts came to my mind, but I said to myself, no, I need to focus on my walking. That's the end of report, Bante.
Both the reports, eh?
Yes, Bante.
Yeah. So both of the places mentioned sitting and walking, the hurting point. In sitting, the leg, and walking, the foot. And still, your mindset is there, just still you have to be with the primary object. That is what you call the correct view. That means we are seeing through the disturbing object, see through the hurting thing, but still you prove occasionally, you can go to the primary object. I am not asking, so no one will ask you to completely be with the primary object. But simple task is, you are aware of primary object without no distraction, no irritation. But now you are with single irritation, single distraction, but still you are being asked. Still see whether primary object disappeared or primary object is absence. No, it is there. Or you can see through the picture and you can see the canvas. Whatever the picture you draw, canvas is there. Canvas is the one holding this thing. So likewise, you have to understand, don't lose the canvas due to the picture. That is the skillfulness of the artist. You are utter fool. If the artist can mislead you, but you are saying, you are a good artist, okay, it's oil paint, or it's a color paint, watercolor, no harm. But I can see the canvas. But canvas is boring. Canvas is monotonous. Even before the painting, canvas was there, but you are not looking at. Only the picture invites you to hang it on your wall. And occasionally you see, each time you see, you at the beginning of course, you see the picture, you never see the canvas. So Buddha is to show you whatever the painting, whatever the skill, it is thin layer of paint. But behind the canvas is there. So don't lose the sight of canvas due to the attractiveness of the painting. So therefore whole world is a painting. You are also doing all the time painting. So you are blocking others to see the reality, the canvas. Canvas is not a commodity. You can't sell it. Only the painter. Painting can do it. So that is how the world is so cheating. So that's why we are wearing something. We do not like to see the nakedness. It appears like something not natural. Nakedness appears like unnatural. But you are born with that. This is the bloody shit civilization. And they make villages, they take towns, they can the capital cities, they have costumes and all the, even for the carcass, they have a costume. Animal world, there is no. Nothing. So they don't have tension. They don't have frustration. They don't have garment industry. They don't have no job situation. They have no quota from American quota for garments. So they are changing. The garment fashions are changing 3 months, 6 months. It's so cheap. But we are so caught up. So therefore, just see the distractions. So just see the irritation. And irritation is there. You know, even the Buddha never deny. And he says, even the irritation is there. You are living, you are awake, and you are mindful. Or you are not unconscious. So you have to sharply mention, leg is hurting, it's an indication of that I am living. It's an indication of that I am not sleeping. It's an indication that I am not unconscious. While walking, I can see the feel the carpet, it is rough. That's an indication I am living. It's an indication I am not sleeping. I am awake, I am not unconscious. So therefore, you have to attribute these three characteristics into each and every irritation, then you are enlightened. If you know how to attribute to this kind of positive, they are not positive, they are reality, then you know how to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Because irritations are there everywhere. People are making stories, people making fabrications, some people go psychiatric, upset. And they are going and talking to another psychiatric patient. Doctors are the worst patients. When you go to the doctor, it's another joke. Hardly anyone says that you are ignorant, that you are ego, that you are wrong view. Because they don't have that guts, they don't have the faith. But the Buddha and the Buddha disciples is always reflecting you to say, this irritation indicates you are here, now I am. You are not dead. You are not sleepy. You are not unconscious. But this little girl, I doubt whether she can understand. Kumar, you think she can understand?
It looks like she can understand, like Dante.
Is she online?
No, I don't think Dante.
So I am so happy if I can directly talk with, because this other participants also will be happy to communicate with her. But what I presented was maybe, she's 7 years, I am 70 years, the gap. But if I write 07, then I am also 7. I put 0 behind. She put the 0 first. So please ask her to change my age into 07. Thank you, we are moving.
Before the last week, I tried to give the comment, but I didn't have enough time, so it was finished before I give my comment. As I remember, I think we were talking about something dealing. I didn't have any note. what I was trying to say at that day, I read a story about there was one king that once that he wanted to search and look how people live. Are they having a good life? How is the price of their goods and groceries? And so he didn't even tell to anyone that he's going out to look for the situation of his territory. So he was he dressed like a beggar and he didn't tell anyone. And then he was going out. So he was going between these markets and all. And suddenly he got hit by a cart and he was bleeding and he was out of his consciousness. And then he was miming that he was asking help from the people. And nobody wanted to help him. And there was one guy who had a big heart and he came to him and then he gave some water and then he brought him this man to his house and he gave all the medicines and and so he was fine after some few weeks. So then he returned back to the castle And then he is a king actually. So and then he came back to this man, and then he helped him, and he gave some the prizes, and he praised him and with gold and all. So after all this happened, so the people from that area, when they see some beggar or a sick man, so everyone wanted to help. So which means that what I see in this Asian, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, so people are trying to help or to give because of they have this something in their mind. As an example, when I was a kid, my mother used to think that my father has some bad luck with this Sensuru, Spartan in English, I think. This, you know, sun, the eclipse, earth, and the other.
Eclipse? Sun?
Sun and Mars, you know, the earth, and then the Sensuru, which means that Spartan.
Saturn.
Yeah. So my mother used to, what she used to do, she every day she wakes up in the morning. And she makes milk rice and with ghee oil, and she put in. So I'm the one who bring it and keep in on the roof. So she didn't even have any idea about that. This crows, you know, crow. I think the name is crow. Yeah. So crows are eating them, kak. So she doesn't have any idea about this crows that they are. They are suffering, or they are hungry, or something like that. But the only idea she had is to get away from this apale.
Bad omen.
So
bad omen.
Bad omen. So you know, this is what I was trying to say. This is a comment, so I tried to give it last time when we gathered here. So that's the only. That's all. Thank you.
I know you might be laughing at this one as well, but what I heard about, what I thought about by reading and other things, apala means like the time that we are given the bad karma which we have done in the past. Those are the things that comes. Those are the apala, means akusala pala, the time that the bad karma is getting in onto you. So we give those things to the crows, but what we are doing really is giving what we have something to somebody. So by doing that good thing, we encourage habba papa sakaranam and kusala supa sampada. That's what I thought. Like, then it gives you dissolve the bad karma that we had and accumulate good karma. So it replaced the bad results by giving them giving something to somebody that accumulates some good karma, so it gives you some good karma replacing the bad karma. That's what I thought about the apala. So thank you very much, Bhante.
All right. Yeah, because I have another little question. Because I just from the meditation I started to have a little headache every time I come back to the breath and when I focus on the breath, and just wanted to ask you about that.
So that is how Goenka became a world master. He had an headache. He went to all the doctors. Incurable. Presently Bhikkhu Bodhi. But Uba King, he has to be mindful. And few days time he found, as far as he is mindful, no headache. So first retreat, so 27 people. Uba King gave marks for 24. He belongs to the three people unsuccessful. He was not successful in Goenka system or Goubakin system. I am talking about the Goenka G. Because of the headache. But he continued to do it. Ultimately, he got ridden of the headache. And he was the master. And then Bhikkhu Bodhi, continuous headache. He went to his place in Goenka system. And Goenka, it was at that time he was living. But Bhikkhu Bodhi tried his best with the help of Venerable Analio. 1.5 hours, full lotus, this thing. But no, it was not there. So therefore, it says it's an indication. Headache is indication you are not dead. Are you sure? Headache is an indication you are not sleepy. And the third thing is, headache indicates you are not unconscious. You can't be unconscious about headache because it is so throbbing. And it is keeping you up. You can't sleep. And you are not dead. You know, the logs and the rocks, they don't have headaches. So you have to understand within that capacity, I am not dead, I am not asleep, I am not unconscious. Still you are breathing. And the day you see the breathing through the headache or any other pain, or this thing, I am not asking throughout to see, and see only one glimpse, that indicates you are a human, superhuman. Not a person mindful without headache. You are a person with headache and still be mindful. And you know where to look into. You are seeing through the headache. You are not looking at the picture. You are looking at the canvas from where the headache happens, where the breath happens. Then the Buddha, after so much of aeons of research, he told, whatever the pain, whatever the mishap, breath is the bare minimum intrinsic characteristic of living body. So he took as a pivotal point. He took as a benchmark. All the other things are coming and going in front of. But body cannot live without the in-breath and out-breath. That is called kaya sankhara. Kaya sankhara, the bare minimum. So when you go to the bare minimum, 100% your mind is pure. No defilements.
So it's
and
not...
And now you see the breath, maybe occasionally. And in front you see the headache. Keep your headache keep you to tell you are not dead. Headache an indication you tell you are not sleepy. You can't sleep. You can be unconscious about the breath. You can be unconscious about the breath. You can be still sleepy about the breath. Still you can live without breath for a short period. But the pain is something inflicting. You have to make use it that it's very dramatic. It's very eventful, it's threatening, and it's make you alert more than the breath. So some people, those who can't see breath, they say, what nice if I can have a pain. So Pandita said, sometimes they put rubble, so stones on the sitting place and sit upon it. Otherwise they fall sleepy. Because no object, no pain, no nothing. So then the pain is the cursor.
So it's not a sign that I focused too hard on the breath.
There may be. But this is a bypass. Let the pain to come. Yes, thank you very much. I have a cup of green tea. Sit here. But I am not looking at you. I am see-through. Yeah. My intrinsic characteristic of living. Breath. Breath means living. Prana. Pranayama, anapana, and pain is coming in between. It is having multifacets. Don't look at the facet for the moment. You see through to make sure I am not dead. I am not sleepy. I am not unconscious here, now I am. So that is your human right. That is the humanness. And if you are losing humanness, you are talking about the pain. You are then a beast. You are just a reptilian. You are just a monkey. But the man is behind. So Buddha is asking to see through, and that is what you call vipassana. Understand?
I think so. Thank you.
Sarai Swaminansa. I just wanted to quickly comment on what you were saying. So in several suttas, you mentioned concentrating too hard. So in several suttas, the Buddha talks about, tranquilizing the body and mind when, practicing meditation. You'll see this in the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha is talking about, tranquilizing the bodily, formations he breathes in, tranquilizing the bodily formations he breathes out. And then he says, tranquilizing the mental formations he breathes in, tranquilizing the mental formations he breathes out. So the Buddha specifically says in several suttas, including the Satipatthana Sutta, that, you know, when somebody is practicing meditation, they shouldn't be concentrating too hard. They should be. And I think, you know, that may be where the headache is coming from. You know, you know, the Buddha, you know, specifically recommends in the suttas that, in several suttas that, you know, when somebody is practicing meditation, like we're specifically, let's say, you know, we're talking about anapanasati here, they're practicing mindfulness of breathing. You know, they want to, you know, relax and tranquilize the body and mind when they're breathing in and out. You know, the mind is, you know, the nature of the mind is to be disturbed and, you know, just be rambling and racing and thinking, you know, about this, about that. And so when we sit down to meditate and, you know, let's say we're practicing anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, you know, as we can see in these, as we can see in several suttas, you know, what we should be doing is tranquilizing our body and mind, getting out of that, you know, habit of, you know, having the mind consistently wander here and there, thinking about this and that. And so, yeah, you know, that's my comment is, you know, in several suttas, the Buddha says that, you know, when we're sitting down to meditate, we should be tranquilizing the body and mind. And a lot of times when somebody has a headache, it's because they're concentrating too hard. So that's my comment.
He's talking with his direct experience.
Sorry, Nansen. Officer, I just appreciate so much this opportunity to hear your teachings and great insights, and also to hear our Taro, experienced Taro here, his insights. Hopefully we can get to them. I'm one of those people that found it difficult to focus on breath, but fortunately I did have pain a great deal throughout my meditation practice, and it always, yeah, just as Swaminathan says, it brings us right to the present moment, and you know, we tend to want to avoid our pain, but go towards pleasurable things and avoid painful things. But, you know, whatever comes up, if it's really taking your attention, I think it's something good to be aware of. And then once you're no longer averse to it or avoiding it, then you'll come back to the breath. And also appreciate your comment about something I noticed when I came to Asia for the first time is how people were so honored to help a guest, you know. Here's obviously a guest, this white man, and so many people coming to help me on the streets and things. And it is much different in the West, and for the most part. And so it's been a great gift to get that teaching. I appreciate hearing the teaching again and just some background about that, about the king finding out and how that became a tradition maybe in Asia due to his experience. So thank you very much for that. And that's all I had. Thank you so much.
Okay, we are going back to the main topic today, Tuataka Sutta in Sutta Nipata.
So we've reached the verse. A bhikkhu should not be boastful, and he should not utter insinuating speech. He should not train himself in imprudence. He should not utter contentious talk. So this morning we were hearing about all of the things that can annoy us, like the young girl was talking about hearing sounds and being disturbed maybe from her object of meditation, whether that's sitting or walking. Then we heard about how we can perceive misfortune in the world, that we're having bad luck. This is a kind of another object that's disturbing our mind. Or we can be having like a pain in the head, a pain in the body, that's also entering our field of consciousness. As Mahatero mentioned, there's the canvas and then there's the oil painting. And do we see the canvas? Do we see the field of consciousness of our mind? So again, speech is perhaps one of the most annoying things or most intrusive things into our field of consciousness. And then these thoughts and ideas that we paint onto the canvas of our field of consciousness arising from our mind, arising from this mental proliferation of thinking and thoughts. And out of all of the kinds of speech, there's the skillful and unskillful speech. So the Buddha is, in the next three sutta verses, he's going to address the importance of speech and that he's advising us to regulate it. So the kinds of speech that can be very painful and annoying, even more painful than a headache, is boastful speech. So the Buddha tells that bhikkhus should not be boastful. They should not be overestimating themselves. They should not be boosting themselves unnecessarily, not giving due credit, but maybe exaggerating and so forth, boasting. And they should not utter insinuating speech. Again, this is kind of related back to insinuating things like that they have certain attainments, a certain power, a certain knowledge. Again, it's taking credit which is not due. That they're insinuating that they have more or are special or something like this. Insinuating means that you don't directly make a false claim, but you establish the suggestion. He should not train himself in imprudence. He should not train himself in imprudence and not utter contentious talk. So here again, imprudence means that one isn't really paying attention to what one is saying or talking, is imprudent, is not aware of the context, not aware of the crowd, says something that is inappropriate and is imprudent, not careful, not prudent, not careful in what he's saying. So again, it's very easy to allow language to slip out and be imprudent. So that the hard work is to be prudent and should not utter contentious talk. So this is, again, creating disturbance or contention, meaning conflict or disturbance within people. So of all of the pains and noises, that can be the most challenging to watch as that canvas that Mahathera was talking about earlier on, to watch that field of consciousness. Speech is perhaps the most tricky because speech can carry an idea or a thought that we can contaminate or share with others in a way that's unskillful. And it can really penetrate into people's minds and create great agitation in that person. Even if you had to poke somebody with a stick or do something physical, fire a bullet at them, it's not as effective as speech can be. And in these times where we have a kind of superpower with communications, devices, and it creates a lot of conflict and contentiousness, and it's imprudent, and it's boastful, and it's insinuating things, then we all kind of have to develop mindfulness of speech. So this becomes, with this new technology, with this kind of superpower, with this gift that everybody has a megaphone in their pocket, or, you know, that we have to become more mindful of our field of consciousness, especially around speech. And if we can, then we have trained a great difficulty. We've managed a great difficulty to train the mind to be able to hear boastfulness, to hear insinuations, to hear imprudence, to hear contentious speech is a great challenge. And then on the other hand, to have that mindfulness so that we are also not part of the problem, where we're adding and contributing to that that imprudence, to that insinuations, to those boastfulnesses, to that conscientious speech is a great challenge. So this skill that the Buddha is pointing to is not just eternal, but so relevant to this present time. And it's notable that even though we talked about fortune and misfortune already this morning, that really the Buddha is putting focus on the things that we can do about the fortune and the misfortune. So we don't create misfortune for ourselves by being boastful, by insinuation, by imprudence, by contentious speech, and that we create good fortune by being not boastful, by not uttering insinuation, by being prudent in our speech, and by not being contentious in our speech. And speech is perhaps one of the greatest and most difficult of skills. And speech is also aligned or adjacent to the mind. So by training the speech, we're training the mind. By training the mind, we're training the speech. And these things come together like a shadow. And that's why it's so important, is the role of speech. And that's why he gives this special direction towards bhikkhus to be exemplars of speech, both in speaking itself and also in the listening. So we have two ears and one mouth, so the emphasis should be ultimately on listening. Okay, maybe Mahatero can...
Yeah, the boasting, not only for the achievement, even the pain is boasted. Even the irritation is boasted. Even the difficulties are boasted. That is called Kamasukalya, Arthakilmatan Yogi. Kamasukalyan Yogi means that you have achieved. You are boasting, telling, I am so and so, and all the kind. But they both are the same, the two sides of the same coin. Our language always boasting. Silence is the best for a people. But for the Aryans, they know how to use the language. But today, people are going to depend upon artificial intelligence. Information technology, utterly wasted, utterly ruining. But that does not indicate that mindfulness, we can't use artificial intelligence. We can use information technology. But it is, whether with artificial intelligence available or not, it is not a hindrance to the mindfulness. Because they know how to make use it. But otherwise, as Einstein mentioned, given a very sharp axe to a monkey, it is hitting. And Sri Lanka, we have this thing, and king has a very, very friendly monkey. So when he was sleeping, he gave the sword to the monkey to keep. So fly came and rest on the king's body. Monkey hit. You can imagine that if present day all the technology handling people are monkeys with the sword. Exaggeration. Which has so much of love to the king, so much of hate to the fly. And the sword is so sharp. Yes, know that prefrontal lobe is working with the amygdala. Hit it. King appointed the monkey. So we are the same. We have given the sword to the monkey. And that monkey is the exaggeration. All the time, people do not know how to talk. That is choiceless awareness. Evenly suspended attention is boring. So we have to exaggerate it. I mean, that is the way we know how to present it, how to write a thesis, how to write the technical terms, and all the kinds of utter camouflage. So you see this book. We have to mark very special feature in these books. Nowhere it is mentioned right reserved. It's the best book on the earth. 50 odd number of books. Any book you find a page right reserved. You can't copy. But this series, and instead, all the books carries one particular sutta. All the Tripitaka book, Tathagatappa Vejito Bhikkave Dhamma Vinayo Vivato Virochati Na Patichannu. O monks, the teaching, according to the teaching or teaching of the Buddha, when you keep it open, when it's transparent, it's brighter. Not when it's covered, not when it's hidden. So all the time we are hiding. We see it is private and confidential. So that means a psychiatric case. And the listening psychiatrist also the same. So we have now 3-4 mindful psychiatrists. They become very popular. They are using National Youth Council. They say this is the most lacking thing in our National Youth Council because we are vocational training, dropouts, everyone accepted, and we have all the range, but no spirit. Then I told, we really understand. I appreciate your understanding the question. It's a very young guy, director. He says, Bhante, we can work too. I told, we don't have this mechanism. We don't have this authority. I'm a human, the ethical right. You have a huge building. We can accommodate 1,500 for as an audience. Then I told, we can call a meeting and we can have a discussion. We have spirituality. We can give it, but we need this kind of terminals to the channels. So they understand it because now we are in such a age. We understand what is lacking. Lacking is simplicity, centric, not eccentric. Everyone is eccentric. Everyone do not know they are living. Everyone do not know they are awake. Everyone do not know they are mindful. Do you think mindfulness is something we have to go and consult John Kabat-Zinn and get $550, 8 weeks module? Nonsense. You are born with mindfulness. You are born with wakefulness. You are born with life. So Buddha has to come and say, hey darling, you are living. Hey darling, you are awake. You are mindful. Oh, are you sure? Sure? We will give enough examples. No, no, my wife is such, my father is such, I am so and so, I am vast, worthless. That cannot be. And Buddha says, no, you are a human, darling. You are living. You are awake. You are mindful. We give all the characteristics to say, no, no, I am not mindful. Come with me. I am daily facing so much of interviews, everyone disapproving I was not mindful. Because of pain or because of irritation. I mean, they are more mindful than the other people because talking about the very tiny pain they have, yeah, under the nose. It is not an exaggeration. It is not a hallucination. It is not a daydreaming. And this is more indicating than the breath. Because pain occasionally comes and goes. Breath, like a canvas. So whenever they happen, whenever any dramatic thing happens, just see this pivotal point, the benchmark, the canvas, the underpinning thing, and that is a birthright. You have nothing to give mindfulness to the people, nothing to give the breath to the people, nothing to give the life to the people. They have to just catalyze it. So therefore, boasting is not always your achievement. People are boasting their pain, their difficulties. I feel so sorry. And this girl, in the second time she mentioned, she says that irritation is not an inflicting thing. Kumara, so can you read the walking path that little girl's reporting? She says this kind of irritation, or she's using another term, and it is not inflicting. That's not that she is stirring. So would you mind to read the second part of your report about walking?
Yes, Manti, just hold on. Shall I read the whole report?
No, second part, walking part.
Walking only, yeah.
Yeah.
My walking meditation. While I was walking, I felt my feet was soft because my carpet soft. So my feet was soft too. When I was walking, my ankle was hurting a tiny bit. I also heard noises like birds chirping. Thoughts came to my mind, but I said to my mind, no, I need to focus on my walking. That's it, Vande.
Yeah, that distractions are there. Mind says, no, I just wanted to be with the canvas. So that is what you call samadhiti. That's what you call prepared mind. That's what you call the mindset. That's what we are going to teach in Sri Lanka in the education reform. Be prepared. That's all Madame Montessori gave it to the young children, they are utterly prepared people. So give them a chance to play according to their tools. Don't select the subject. They go and take the tools and they are playing. And then you can see no conflict. Because everyone, no one is, no two people fighting for the same instrument. All the instruments are there. So if your mindset is there, you are aiming at Nibbana, Nibbana is under your very nose. And if you are aiming at inflicting or boasting your little suffering, you can write. But still, I appreciate you have to write the suffering, you have to write the irritation. Because then only you can communicate with other people. No, I had no any problem, I was walking, doing walking, finished. No, not dramatic. She says, I have ankle pain, I have the soft carpet, I have the soft leg. But not inflicting because my mind is seeing through. That seeing throughness is not meditation. Seeing through is not listening. It's not the theoretical knowledge. That is the inferential knowledge. That's the deductive knowledge. And Upandita Sayadaw says, utterly, if she is not having that deductive knowledge, the teacher must be blamed. Teacher is not giving the theoretical understanding. Give the theoretical understanding, how to put it in the proper set. And teacher always there, to tell, and the other person, the person writing, must give the clear-cut picture to the teacher, then teacher will say, this is the inferential knowledge. It's the deductive knowledge. It's not the theory. It's not practice. Deductive knowledge, people consider as the chintame jnana, underestimate sometimes. Yes, you have to underestimate without practicing. When you are practicing, chintame jnana do a lot. And that changing from the belief to the non-belief, non-belief to the belief, happening through the chintame jnana. If you are hard and fast, teacher can't change you. You have to believe unbelievable thing. You have to unbelieve what you already believed so far. But that is what the adamant people, they can't. So Mahasi Sayadaw took a special chapter to indicate the value of the direct touch, the practical understanding and the inferential knowledge. And still below, the theory knowledge. And Mahasi Sayadaw says, inferential knowledge also a product of vipassana. You are ready. You are ready to listen to the teacher. You are ready to accept the negative as positive. You accept to understand the nothingness is complete. Nothingness is fulfillment. A lost is a gain. And that is why the Buddha was hesitant to read it or teach it. Because people are so hard and fast with the good, bad, and the justice, injustice, liking and disliking. They are just bubbles. Daily we are fighting, daily, at least 1 hour. So he had a special task yesterday because I am leaving today at 6:30. So he came. And he squeezed my neck. Give 1 hour. Complete. I was listening, because guy is changing. He is proving. Ultimately says, may or may not be. I am also ready. Yes, that is the inferential knowledge. Don't hold into any theory, any formula, no golden theories. Present moment is ready. So therefore, that preparedness, whatever they are showing, I am looking at the boring canvas. The primary object is the Jnanaponika Sayadaw, or Jnanaponika Swaminath, it's a German. He says, mindfulness never leave you. It's incredible. Not incredible, such a credible thing. Even at the hardship, mindfulness is there. Breath is there. Breath is always there. The shrewdness, forget about the breath, forget about the mindfulness. You are going for the pain or gain or pleasure or pain. And then mindfulness is waiting. But mindfulness never hates you. It's just waiting. It's the everlasting one. So it's a birthright. So in mindful school, we are telling you are born lucky because your everlasting mindfulness is installed. But just be awake, just be aware about it, then you are a full human, not nothing to achieve, nothing to boast about the pain or pleasure. It is to just to satisfy your idiot companion. You need no any companion. When the mindfulness is there, you are the king, you are the subject, you are the doctor, you are the patient, you are the teacher, you are the disciple. So what is the communication is there. Otherwise, you are always boasting. The best term is boasting. So today education, today social system, today economy, today social science and policy, everything, nothing but boasting, all are shrewd fellows, rogues behind the robe. No one will say, no, 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 I am not. But they can't because they openly it is happening. We know when we are sitting, our mind is jumping out and out. But it is not a big crime. It is not an unskillfulness. Because we know. We are not hesitant to tell. Even to the disciple, even to the teacher, we say, yes, that is it. Then what? No one can do. But our simplicity, our honesty and our humbleness to tell, even after practicing 40 years, I find my mind is doing all the kind of juggleries. That is why I am sharing. And when someone is telling, I have a hidden laugh in my mind. Yes, he is talking about my mind. Even the psychiatric cases, even the lost, even the failure, when Jnananda put it in a very beautiful way, I can't find any mistake of others which I have not done myself. And one prisoner in India, he was a drug addict and go to the prison and then he practiced Goenka system. And he told, anyone else in the world doing any mistake, it is my mistake. Because he is doing this mistake because of me. Prabhakaran was so radical, how do you call it, Trastavadi? Terror. Because of Sri Lankan. He's an innocent guy from the middle class. Sri Lankan people went there and created a grudge. He found the Sri Lankan as against, not the grudge as against. Had he seen the grudge or the anger, he would have been enlightened. He killed the agent, not the anger. So when I was working with Dr. Parakramapanna, he told, if I can go to Prabhakaran, I will tell you, your observation is correct, interpretation is wrong. You are also doing with the anger. You are also doing with the anger. Just try to reduce anger. Then I am with you. Many people think we can't talk like this with this Prabhakaran. No. He's a sensible person. No one thinks. No, everyone wants to kill him. Already killed him. Killing his army. Killing his arm. But instead to teach them, hey darling, it is wrong. But don't get angry with the killer. But just see the anger. You are also consumed by the anger. Nowadays, no political theory like that. No war theory like that. No economic theory like that. No social theory. Because he is doing mistake because of me. If I am not here on the earth, no mistakes. Understand? Your bloody presence, your bloody foolish existence, make everything wrong. Please die yourself. Yeah. And Kalam Manyasi, the Buddha says that, I can't remember the stanza. The Arahant is waiting to go to Parinibbana. His performance was not important because he is waiting. Kalam Manyasi, Arya. Waiting to go to Parinibbana. All the things are happening due to the 5-6 senses. But don't try to be judgmental. Don't try to be good and bad. Don't try to be boasting. But boasting is the simply speaking, missionary. All the missionary works are nothing but the boasting. They are utterly not practicing people. Simply to put into simple, commentaries in Theravada. They know everything, not practice. So we put the commentary is more than the Buddha word, because we can understand the Buddha word, we can understand the interpretation. So interpretation came. So the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation is, I think, 5th or 6th of the Sutta Nipata. Lucky or unlucky, he put all the commentaries. The majority of the book is commentaries. We are not going to the footnotes and the commentaries, but he's given completely. But he has given the cream of the other English translations. Sutta Nipata, this is authentic Buddha Jayanti, but a lot of other translations are there, because these Buddha words are very difficult to translate because of the commentators. They intervene and then they get the authority. Don't go beyond. We are the authority. You have to listen to my example. You have to listen to my order, my grammar. You have to learn grammar and everything. Don't do it. When Manjana Ramaji says, forget about it. Just read it to see what is happening. We can understand 10-15%, never mind. Without the help of anything, you just read it. And for the foreigners, I am telling, this is Pali, this is singular. They have concise 4 pages, 4 lines here. You have to reduce the translation to 4 lines. This is more difficult than the Pali. So people, they are the reason why they are not reading, because they are talking about very hard, concise language and mostly wrong. But English, you can't do that. English is an outspoken language, but this Pali and Sinhala is an introvert language. Negative thing we can report, but positive not. Sanskrit and Pali, English, positive languages. So people are very happy. So my practice, my monkhood and everything, partly because of I am reading like anything in English. But I understand or not, I don't know. Because it is giving some perspective. Otherwise, we are thinking in a... And the, what I find mistake or faults with Buddha Rakkita Hamaduru is, boasting is not only positive things. They are boasting about their pain. They are boasting about their difficulties. And that is what the third world countries we are doing in front of IMF. If you can write a good report, they will give money. On what? On loan. On interest. So the best people is those who can write our suffering. And the best they have done is in Tamil diaspora. They keep the Tamil people suffering. They never allow them to come out and report to the other countries. You see, our people are suffering like this thing. And they get money, never go to the Tamil majority. They are using to fight against. Meanwhile, they are bourgeoisie life. And so African people, Asiatic people, and the now village monks, they are going abroad. They are taking photos of their village and showing and bringing money. Not accountable. But they are born in the village, bringing for, they have big projects and kind of thing going on. And the just like at tsunami, people are helping. I mean, they are doing in a genuine work. But how is going to monitor it? Ultimately, it is wrong. So this is how the exaggeration is never leading to simplicity, always leading to eccentric situation. You will gather a lot of people, but all are mad. But when you go to the simple speaking, boring, monotonous, no one is happy. That's why the Sutta Nipata is not a popular issue, popular subject people to discuss. They are talking about the Digha Nikaya, Majjhima Nikaya, others. This is in Khuddaka Nikaya, sundry items. Buddha's teaching, the last one, everything after selecting, they are sundry items, short chips. In Sri Lanka, we have, you know, in our Sri Lankan curry, they put Maldive fish, Ummalagada. Have you never heard? Maldive fish means a kind of a dry fish, a special one, and you cut very tiny pieces, put into vegetables. So when you are eating, in Nisanwani, that's also prohibited. Ummalakada. So these are ummalakada, very tasty. It's called රස මසවුල කියලා කියන්නේ හොඳයි there's a one term but one side is using it they are small sundry items the gist of it the cream of it but of course I agree someone has to be skillful in Dika Nikaya Majjhima Nikaya then only you can go into that understand how much they have misinterpreted Dika Nikaya Majjhima Nikaya same way this is also misinterpreted but if you are practicing and if you have inferential knowledge if you know the foreigners and ourselves and the suffering people and rich people and the interpreters and all the kind if you have a common discussion then you have to understand you have to pick the person the centric thing not the eccentric thing you are usually picking boasting thing eccentric thing you have to be simple you have to be humble you have to be here and now so with that accusation I stop sir
thank you Swaminanta Yeah, reports, doing reports and getting this sort of feedback is, you know, you report this headache. It's kind of like when you say headache, that's something that we want to, it's a concept. What is really a headache, you know, and how can we report that without even saying headache? Can we look more closely at what the sensations are? And just report them as, in some other simpler language, headache is sort of a dramatic language. Would you say, Swami, you know?
Yeah, it's a color, it's a ummalakada, moldy fish.
Okay,
so. In the meditation, you have a pain, you have ache, you have a bad memory, or you have a manipulation you are going to do. There, all of a sudden, bubbles coming. You have to understand, it's a disturbing the water surface, bubbles, but make the situation dramatic, eventful. So not the news, it's entertainment. That is his way of presenting. People don't like news. They want to have entertainment. So pain is an entertainment. Memory is an entertainment. Your manipulation and your volitional activities are entertainment. And making me and not me, difference is an entertainment. That is how the boost, ego is boosting. That is utterly encouraging education. Utterly encourage this kind of a dramatization, eventfulness. So now present day people, that's why they are going to the computer games and weaponry and drugs and all that because they want to have something higher grade stirring or inflicting. I mean, that is not in one nation. Everywhere across along the generation, people are going for quick things, dramatic things. I am an old man, still the same. Still the same. We are finding shortcuts, quick results, a dramatic one. I am very smarter than others. And all. So that is the Mara. That is the Satanic. Henahuru. And that is what Ahuramadas, there's a Zoroastrianism, there's a one sect, there's a one cult, there's a one group, Zoroastrianism, that they believe Ahuramadas, Asura. They call Ahuramadas, they believe in the evil god. If the evil god is shaped, you are better off. And that's how the present day government also. They're always happy with the thugs. Prostitutes and looting people, and then they know they are safe. So all the government, that means he says deep state, governments are hiring this kind of people. So how can the justice can happen? How the moral fear and moral shame can happen? But they are spreading in open and in. Earlier or not open, in. Now open, due to the media. It's very simple. That is why the conspiracy theories, they make theories out of that. Because government always running with the mechanism. It's a deep state. They run by thugs. So we run the meditation center, still the same theory.
So again, coming back to the practice and relationship to pain, since you've mentioned pain, and you can see all of these elements of boastfulness or insinuating speech or imprudence or conscientious talk in relation to the object of pain itself. and if we're trying to describe it to others. Whereas, I think a skillful meditator is deeply experiencing the pain. I mean, it isn't just simply that this is a headache. They're aware of the onset of the headache. They're aware of all the different kinds of phenomena associated with the headache. Was it pulsing? Was it hard? Was it stiff? Where did it begin? Where did it end? Was it permanent or impermanent? And they're also aware that it's within a field of consciousness. In even the most quite severe pain, and I've tried to help people at times who had migraine. Like, these are people who have to spend maybe 1, 2, 3 days in a dark, completely dark room. They have to take quite specific medication for their migraines. But I'm always trying to say to them, is that the only thing? Because when we're mindful of these pains, we can become extremely obsessed by the painful object itself. And we're you can say the boastfulness is that, oh, this is the worst pain, this is the worst ever, and it's a complete nightmare, and I can't do anything else, and I'm a slave to this pain. And insinuating that I'm special, that this pain is special. We can fail to see that this pain is just pain, that this pain isn't the worst thing ever, that this pain is just part of a whole constellation of things that are happening in any single moment. And I've been trying to teach dentists how to guide their patients while they're doing procedures on the patient. Do you see, when the dentist has his hand or his or her hand and tools and equipment inside their mouth, the patient is completely obsessed by the what's happening in their mouth. But if the procedure is going on for 45 minutes, 1 hour, the main problem is that their body is so stiff and so tense from not relaxing. They're giving all the attention to the mouth and none to the rest of the body. So I know from my own experience with dentists is I have to constantly scan my body. I have to deliberately put aside the pain and deliberately think about my feet, deliberately think about my knees, deliberately think about my buttocks, my back, my neck, all the other parts of my body, and deliberately and consciously relax each one. Relax, 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 relax. And put aside completely what the dentist is doing. I'm just using the dentist as a metaphor for your headache or whatever it is. The same with cancer patients. They get so obsessed about the cancer in that part of their body, and I'm saying to them, what about the other side? What about the front? What about the back? What about the top? What about the bottom? And, so pain is a big teacher. Bow down to pain. And with regards to having pain and a headache every time you sit down and breathe and meditate, and am I concentrating too much? Maybe you are, but you're also not giving attention to the rest of your field of consciousness. It's not the only thing that's happening. So pain is kind of like a braggart and a boastful. And of course, if the pain is a legitimate pain, I'm not saying, be self-inflicting or neglectful or something like that. No, if you have real genuine pain, a lot of the time I'm teaching weekend retreats and people come on these retreats and they're sick as a dog. And I have to say to them, hey, listen, look, after this retreat, can you go to see a doctor? Can you go to see a physiotherapist? Can you go to see somebody to help you with this condition that you've become aware of on this retreat? And then the next retreat, oh, did you go? No, I didn't bother. So it was a complete drama for the retreat, but they didn't bother. They neglected afterwards. They didn't take it seriously. So take pain seriously, but also understand that it's within a constellation of the field of consciousness of the mind. But once you start to see, the whole constellation, once you start to see the whole canvas, then it becomes extremely useful. You can say, oh, okay, that pain is there. That pain is consistently there. After I get up, after this sitting, I'm going to go and talk to a doctor and I'm going to take this seriously because I know it's serious. I know this is a persistent kind of pain. Then there's other pain where it's like I haven't got a good relationship with this disturbance and I made a drama out of it. I really elevated that pain. I give it an unskillful attention. You know, I boosted it up. So these sentences here about not boasting, not insinuating, not imprudence, you can see right into the breath how those things are active. And in solving the breath, in solving this puzzle with the breath, you're actually solving that inner speech. And that inner speech is what's building the external speech, the boastfulness and all the rest. So, like with this bhikkhu, you also can go the other way around. When I hear the external speech, the boastful speech, when I hear people annoying me with what they're... I'm like, why is that annoying me? And I look into my own heart and I kind of realize I'm amplifying their speech. I'm taking their insinuation as fact. And it's not fact. It's just another data point. I don't have to accept it or not. And then that's very liberating. Anyway, these are just some ideas of how this verse is also related to the immediate here now I am.
May I put two ideas?
Please.
The one thing is, when the pain happens, if you're accepting the pain, that means you are ready to it, open to it, aware of it. Then the pain is a pleasure. If you are rejecting, as you mentioned, you will exaggerate it and you can't see any other thing, only the pain. But if you accept it, ask pain to just be with me. It can't. Just be with me. Can't. Then he says, no, not only that pain, I have this thing and that thing. And then pain will make excuses to run out. And there you can see, pain can't make itself justified. Unless your foolishness support. Best thing is to say, yeah, darling, good. You are now more consistent. Be with pain. Forget about the breath. Just be with the pain. I am open. I am new. I am aware of it. Then pain becomes so shy. Run away. Run away. Not only pain. Your plans, your attributions, your labeling, everything run as far as you appreciate it foolishly. You appreciate it with happiness now. That is what we define as mindfulness. Always happy. Because the pain came uninvited. And asking him to be, you are the chief guest. Have a seat. Don't go, huh? Now you are the main actor in the game. No, I have other works. Because other things are available. So now it is time for Pindapatha. Thank you for the revealing this kind of area. So be pain with you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, Swami Nansa, for your great teaching. And thank you to Tara.